ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
When you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a boxer. More so, I liked wearing robes.
I wanted to be a researcher or information gatherer when I was a child.
I wanted to be a fireman, dashing off to the scene of a fire and trying to be the hero.
Desperately wanted to be an economist. Sadly, my maths was not my strongest subject at school.
These unconscious kind of associations or forces can actually influence our sense of satisfaction and our career choices.
Hello, I'm Lisa Leong. And on this episode from our This Working Life archives, you're going to hear how tapping into your childhood career dreams can help guide you and improve your job satisfaction.
You know, through my studies at INSEAD, I had the opportunity to explore perhaps some unconscious associations that I hadn't previously known associated to being a fireman.
That's Paul Harvey.
And I'm a lecturer at INSEAD and executive coach at the INSEAD Business School based out in France with campuses in various places around the world.
So you didn't become a fireman?
No.
So tell us about what has been the undercurrent, I guess, of being a fireman in your daily life now.
You know, so consciously there was, you know, the desire of, rushing to the scene of a fire to be the hero. But through my studies, I also got to understand that, you know, being a fireman was also a desire for someone to kind of come and take care of me, to protect me, to help me out when I needed help myself. And I got access to those unconscious attributes that I had seen in firemen that I wished that I had needed myself as I was growing up.
And how important was that to identify this deeper level?
Well, it was really important because unconsciously it actually had been steering or influencing my career choices and also my sense of satisfaction up until that point, but I hadn't known that. So through kind of my research, I discovered that these unconscious kind of associations or forces, they're almost like hibernating bears. They lurk in our psyche and our unconscious, and they awaken when they're not being nourished or fed. And that they can actually influence our sense of satisfaction and our career choices. So there were times when I felt very fulfilled in my career, where I was helping others, you know, kind of being the hero. But there are other times where, you know, I had very kind of, on the surface, very kind of satisfying careers, good title, well paid, but there was something missing. You know, there was just something that wasn't satisfying me, that I couldn't quite put my finger on. And it wasn't until I kind of explored the deeper meanings of what it was, what I wanted as a child, that I kind of was able to access those deeper meanings.
Now, this is really interesting and intriguing, actually, because a lot of job satisfaction research and work is done on personality traits, behaviours, mm-hmm. decision-making, but we don't seem to be paying attention to this much at all. So you call it a childhood fantasy career with a PH. Can you go deeper on this for us?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we may all be familiar with the term, you know, a childhood fantasy career with an F, which is really talking about kind of the conscious aspects of those fantasies. You know, many children want to grow up and be doctors and astronauts and princesses and knights, etc. And we all have kind of conscious attributes that we're aware of associated to each of those roles. But each of those roles also have kind of unconscious associations to them as well. And these are attributes that we kind of unconsciously project onto those roles, onto those characters. And then again, kind of unconsciously kind of introject them back into our psyche, whereby they become objects, mental objects, that influence our choices and our sense of satisfaction.
Okay, so Paul's saying that our childhood career fantasies with an F reveal our conscious desires, and the fantasies with a PH tap into the unconscious motivations behind that career choice. Given it's such a useful tool to tap into our motivations, why do we so often overlook it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all of the kind of conscious and, you know, kind of more recognized career guidance that we receive is all still good stuff. It's all great stuff, and it's been helpful to me in my career. It's just that it has not provided a complete picture. So essentially by bringing in awareness of these unconscious forces, we can add in more information that gives us a more holistic view of what leads to something, to a satisfying career for ourselves. And then also bringing these previously unconscious factors into our conscious thinking, we can also then factor them into our decision-making and also become aware of those attributes that are important to us. You know, in some of the people that I studied, you know, that they also spoke of that some of the attributes associated to their fantasy career were already conscious to them. However, they also, going through the study, realized that there were certain behaviors that they did that were related to the unconscious associations. For example, there was a young lady who wanted to be a banker growing up. This was her fantasy career that her father did, and she wanted to be like her father. Now, she wanted to be well-respected, have integrity, and also work for a stable organization. When looking for a job, she was aware of those conscious factors. But what she wasn't aware of, that she also associated bankers with being very meticulous and detail-oriented. And what she realized is that every time she started a new job, she would spend the first 100 days creating structures and organizations around her that would enable her to be meticulous and detail-oriented, whether the job needed them or not. Now that she brought that back into her awareness, she can actually, you know, you can kind of go to the balcony on your own behavior and look down on yourself and actually be curious about, well, actually, what am I up to right now? Is this what the job needs or is this what I need? Ideally, both of those things can be satisfied. But if you're more conscious of those things, then you can actually, you know, have more agency over your behaviors and the way that you're showing up. If they're unconscious, those attributes essentially have us. They are working us. We're not working them.
Hi, my name is Afroot, and I wanted to be a researcher or information gatherer when I was a child. So we came to Australia as migrant refugees, and so I spent a lot of time with my brother, who was 5 years older than me, helping raise me in some ways. And so we had an interesting caregiver-child relationship, and so I would often write summaries of his behaviour for my parents. And then in that summary, I would ask them to rate him, basically, and whether what he did or said or instructed me to do was, you know, on a scale of 1 to 3 or simple yes or no, was, you know, okay or sufficient enough. But in the background was, now thinking back, was this real passion and obsession almost of gathering information, writing down thoughts, observations, and trying to understand people. And I never in that moment, up until now probably, reflect on it as something that was carrying me as whether a passion or an inclination to do something with. Probably late into high school, I discovered psychology. So I remember taking a psychology subject and thinking, this is it. Like, this is exactly what I want to do. And this is, you know, brilliant. And here's my career. I finally found it. And, you know, lo and behold, I did follow that and I followed the trajectory. And I'm now an organizational psychologist and have been for 15 years.
Hi, my name is Karen and I work in healthcare. When I was younger, I desperately wanted to be an economist. Sadly, my maths was not my strongest subject at school. And it wasn't until a session with a very pragmatic and down-to-earth careers advisor where she said, Karen, you know, marketing's practically the same thing, but with people and pictures. Focus on the things you love, which is the people and the behavior and the humans and the impact that you can have, rather than thinking about the numbers and thinking about that from an economics perspective. It's a different approach, but using the same love and passion that you've got.
And you have another example of Suresh, whose name has been changed for the purposes of your research, whose childhood fantasy was to be a traditional dancer. Now, he didn't end up being a traditional dancer, but can you take us through this case study?
Yeah, I love talking to Suresh. So Suresh, as you said, wanted to be a traditional dancer, but he ended up as a regional head of credit control, which is, you know, you can't imagine perhaps a more polarized set of kind of careers. But essentially they had similar attributes in his mind about that. So for Suresh, being a traditional dancer was really the allure of being on stage. It was about kind of wowing the crowd. It was about receiving recognition and also doing lots of international travel. Now, actually, Suresh was able to find those attributes in his role as regional head of credit control. He would do lots of international travel. He had employees all over the world. He had to do large town halls where he was speaking and, you know, kind of captivating the attention of the crowd that gave him this really kind of like strong sense of kind of satisfaction and meaning in his work. And he never really kind of fully understood, well, why was that so important to him? Now, Suresh, as many children do, that when they express their fantasy careers to their parents will often say, well, that's very sweet, dear, but, you know, you're not going to be a dancer because it doesn't pay very well. You know, head off into financial services or become a doctor or become an engineer. Well, you know, the children may go on to try to, you know, honor their parents' wishes, but they are also secretly still trying to fulfill their own childhood wishes at the same time.
Yeah. But what's interesting here is, so there's the conscious part, which is that he wanted to be a traditional dancer, which could mean that he, you know, gets to dance a bit at the Christmas parties, et cetera. But I'm interested in the unconscious part of traditional dance and how that might have changed the way in which he is executing his job and also his career and the shadow side of that.
Yeah. You know, so, Suresh was very, very willing to accept invitations to speak at large conferences, at large groups. He was very willing to accept these international assignments and to go travel. You know, so unconsciously, he was very willing to accept invitations that were fulfilling those unconscious desires that he had in himself. Now, the shadow side of that is Suresh may have not been very interested in some of the more required or, you know, conscious parts of the role. You know, he probably would have been, you know, I didn't ask him directly, but I imagine that he probably would have been less willing to sit in front of an Excel sheet, given a choice between, you know, diving into the details in an Excel sheet or speaking in front of a crowd. He would always speak in front of a crowd.
Okay, Paul, so can you take me through it? Show me how it's done.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an overview of the process. We probably won't go through, you know, each step exactly because I think that that conversation is often best done in a one-on-one conversation because we never know what unconscious material may come up.
Oh, yes. Okay, but, good.
So did you have a childhood fantasy career when you were growing up?
I think my earliest memory is wanting to be on Young Talent Time. So that was a television show which had all these kids who used to sing and dance on the TV. And I even have a photo of me with a sort of Bugs Bunny carrot and it's plugged in as a microphone and I'm sort of singing. So I wanted to be Little Lisa. So Paul starts to dig deeper and deeper.
How did little Lisa feel when she imagined being on that show?
Kind of bigger. Okay. I feel connected.
Are there other images that come to mind or memories?
And it's the feeling I've just realised.
Is there moments in your career today where you feel the most energised, the most
it's
alive?
It's about the
most
person that present. I'm connecting with. And
what are some of the significant roles you've done in your working
started
life?
Started volunteering in hospital radio.
Okay, fantastic.
It's like I felt whole.
Okay. You know, so these are the types of other associations that given more time, we might be able to kind of pull the thread out and explore further.
Okay, so that process took a while. And if I'm honest, there was a lot of soul searching too. So I asked Paul to summarize the questions we can ask ourselves to get a little bit closer to those unconscious motivations guiding our career choices.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I would ask the person, I would begin with what is their current actual or what is their actual career trajectory and then have them self-identify which of those careers have been most satisfying for that individual. Then I would ask them what did they have a childhood fantasy career growing up? And then we would explore the unconscious associations to that role through feeling, through imagery, through memories, stories, nostalgia that gets evoked. Then we would kind of extract the attributes of that fantasy career and look for a correlation between those attributes and the attributes of the roles that the person has actually taken up. Now, if there's a strong correlation, then we can start to kind of pull at that thread and make meaning out of when in that person's life were those attributes very important and why. And once we've kind of explored that meaning, then we're kind of bringing that content to consciousness. And then that those new associations can be factored into one's choices, decision-making, you know, kind of going forward. And also how they take up their current role as well. It doesn't mean that they have to transition to a new role to find that, but they can actually cultivate those attributes in their current role as well.
What I love about this process, Paul, is just going to that deeper level. So it's not about, you know, the obvious things that you might get from when I was a child, you know, I wanted to be a singer, therefore, you know, I like to sing in my job.
Right.
It's going into that, you know, deeper level of, well, what is it about the thing that was actually the driver, that unconscious driver?
Yes, yeah. And that thing had meaning in a particular moment and in that individual's life as well. It's not also just a generic thing. It's a very personal, specific thing to that individual.
So let's go to your research then. When you did the interviews with the participants, so there were 16 participants, 84 fantasy career attributes came up. What were the top three, Paul?
I think the top three were actually to either be like or not like their parents or their parent figure. The second strongest was a sense to be free, a desire to be free. And then thirdly, was a desire to be seen and accepted.
What do you make of this?
Well, I make that, I think that childhood, you know, growing up is a scary experience for all of us often, and that, we need often what is the most important to give a child is actually those unspoken things, those feelings that can actually make them feel whole rather than the more kind of material or kind of outward kind of worldly things. And if we don't get those things, then we can kind of work unconsciously throughout the rest of our life to try to seek that fulfillment that we didn't get earlier in life. So actually, if you are a parent today and you have children, I think the most important thing is not, you know, for example, not to give them the latest iPhone, but to actually to give them the gift of undivided attention and curiosity, be present. And those gifts that you give will actually stay with that child for the rest of their life. And actually will mean that they actually don't have to work as hard through the rest of their life to try to fulfill those things.
When is this reflection, though, on childhood fantasy best done? Because can you actually do it real time, let's say when you're making the first career choices at the tail end of school, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, I've done actually some of this research more recently with MBA students and also recent grads, undergrads. And I think it can still be helpful and impactful, but however, they also haven't kind of had the life experience where they've made these kind of wrong twists and turns. And so the sting in the tail isn't quite as strong. Where I love to do most of my work and research is actually with mid-career professionals, because they are a group of people who are becoming aware that, you know, they don't have an endless amount of time left, and they become curious about, well, do I want to keep doing what I've been doing, or do I actually want to find a more meaningful and kind of fulfilling career with the time I have left? Often these people have, you know, some regrets, you know, some bad choices, some bad decisions. And also they're often dealing with kind of aging parents and seeing they don't want to kind of make the same mistakes that their parents made, that they actually want to be able to look back at the end of their life and say, I've done something meaningful and I've made a positive contribution to their community or their society or whatever's important to them.
Because when you were doing your research on these fantasy career attributes, I mean, how often did money come up?
Surprisingly, not very much. Yeah. And of course, you know, we all need to earn some money to pay for our way through life. But actually, money isn't going to be the thing that gives you that deep felt sense of satisfaction. Of course, it's nice, you know, and if you can have both, why not? But ultimately, you know, when we look back on the end of our careers, the money gets less and less relevant and less important, but actually how will we be remembered and what positive impact are we leaving for the generations who come behind us become more important to us.
I'm Ryan and I'm founder of a company and we help workplaces with their culture and employee well-being. So when I was little, I wanted to be a boxer. I like boxing, but more so I liked wearing robes. So I was attracted to it for that reason. I would get a robe on or a dressing gown and then ask for my gloves to be tied up. It's pretty hard to put boxing gloves on when you're wearing a robe and you've got the hood over you and you can't see what you're doing. And then it was just nice to parade around the house thinking I was champion of the world without ever having thrown a punch. And even from a young age, and probably what I'm still trying to do now and trying to give myself a bit of a kick in the arse maybe to stop doing, is to care less about dressing for or acting like the role rather than just, you know, doing it. I think it's some weird thing that a lot of us do, which is maybe dressing up to fit in or dressing up to kind of be the person that you think others expect you to be.
Paul, if I'm a leader or a manager listening, how might I help my team members with their childhood fantasies and their unconscious career drivers?
Well, so first of all, is you can have a conversation, you know, and I think for leaders, you can also be vulnerable and also share with others what your childhood fantasy career was as well. What you'll probably already be able to tune into is actually finding some correlations between what their fantasy career was and what it meant to them as a child and the way that they take up their role today. And as you become aware of this, you can actually subtly start to kind of weave this into the way that you relate to that individual in the way that they do their work. If you know that they were actually looking for capturing the attention of the audience, why not give them some more opportunities to speak in front of crowds? You know, if that's something that you don't like very much yourself, but you know that the other person has an unfulfilled wish to do that, why not do that? So essentially, you're trying to kind of craft the job around the individual where they can be fully present and fully engaged in the role. And then you'll get much more output and loyalty and belonging from that individual if you can do that.
And then appealing to the leaders themselves, why is it then imperative for them not to ignore it completely?
Yeah, I'm sure leaders all have had the experience of, you know, there's just some skill that you've been trying to get somebody to learn or do for years and years, and you're doing that performance review again this year, and you're saying the same thing, you know, I really wish you were better at time management, and, you know, I really need you to be paying attention. Now, if you have these kind of repeated kind of conversations, that's a signal to say, I wonder if something else is going on, something that might be below the surface, something that is unconscious. And so that's a signal to you to be curious and to explore what those perhaps unconscious or hidden drivers might be at play. And you can do that through, one of the ways you can do that is through having a conversation about what the individual wanted to be when they grew up.
Thank you so much, Paul.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to chat to you today.
Paul Harvey, lecturer and executive coach at the INSEAD Business School. And thanks to Afruz, Karen and Ryan for sharing their stories. I'm Lisa Leong. Thanks for listening to This Working Life. It's produced by Zoe Ferguson and mixed by Carrie Dell. Next time on This Working Life, we're looking at friction in the workplace.
We kept running into leaders, organizational designs. They weren't aware or they didn't care of what we call about their cone of friction, how their decisions made things unwittingly difficult for people.
And how you can be a friction fixer.
You can just start out and ask yourself, what's my cone of friction? Who do I have influence over? And am I making things harder or easier for them?
That's next time on This Working Life. Until then, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.